meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome, radio fans, Winds of Change radio fans. It's Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. Father Kois here. That is... we got the reward room open right away, but I haven't done anything yet, Nick. You know, do I deserve the reward room for that? That's because today's special, I feel like I got an early Christmas gift in the studio right here. Many of you Winds of Change listeners will know this next voice. You got to say hello to the mister.
It's me. It's
Tony.
I've been here. Yeah.
Tony, who is off and on with Father. With Father Tony.
I've been studying abroad, so. It's nothing like being in-house for the brain wrinkling.
Indeed. Brain wrinkling Wednesdays are very special.
Yes.
And I liked seeing on the podcast when those who can look at the podcast, you know, and I encourage you to look at the podcast when you see the two Tonys. That's often... It's often how Nick lines it up for them.
Yeah.
Let me remind you out there, my friends, if you can't just block off your hour between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock, please try to listen on podcast. You know, that's the way I listen to a lot of my radio stuff.
It's for these young whippersnappers. I love listening to the radio, so I make sure I always
just
get my
turn
dose.
It right on.
My dose of... Winds of Change on Wednesdays.
Yeah. Well, I catch up sometime in the evening or early morning, getting dressed and everything. I just throw on a podcast.
See, my problem is once I start that, I can't. I'm done. I need to stay there.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
We haven't had that warning in many a times, but I'm sure people that know it.
You are not supposed to operate heavy machinery.
Exactly.
Or during brain wrinkling. Winds of Change.
If you need to pull over, that's probably the better thing.
That's right. Oh, goodness. But since I brought it up, some people might not know how to do podcasting. Almost all smartphones and computers will have some kind of podcast application. Mm-hmm. So look on your computer or your phone, see if there's a podcast application. If not, then go to where you get apps and look for a podcast app. Then you download that and open it best you can. And then look for Podbean. Podbean is the overall app that runs lots and lots of podcasts. And you have to put in the Winds of Change. I think it helps to put in Father Bush and Winds of Change. Sometimes it doesn't. Have you ever tried that?
I think, too, well, you know, I don't go to the Podbean. I'm very, but I think we, ststanschurch.org, I think that's.
Where you can find it.
Yeah. I think even your shows, too.
Yeah.
Saturday, the Wednesday shows are there, too.
And
it's a little easier.
I send out a link through Flock Notes.
Yeah, I love the Flock Note. I always get those.
I didn't do it today, actually.
Yeah,
I was very sorry. Just too crazy of a morning sometimes.
But it's just during the week I get your little link and I just...
Yeah, and
I
it usually...
like the YouTube stuff.
Okay.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. Anyways, I'm gonna promise a very challenging show today.
This is good.
I might need some handkerchiefs I have right here in my hand here. It may be a because it's really what I have is a book written about children who are now adults who grew up in a divorced family. It's called, appropriately, The Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak. I feel like I don't like to just read when I'm here on the radio. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't do that much, but there are some big sections here that are just worth listening to, and we'll have to comment on it because definitely family relationships are fundamental. They're just all about in our lives, you know? It's so easy to get wrong, so hard to get right, and the good Lord has got to guide us through, and so this is wisdom. Before we get to some of that tear-jerking stories, we're in the midst of, this is the week after Thanksgiving, if you're listening live, but I put in the context if you're listening to a podcast, and the impeachment hearings are starting today. And you'll get a lot of that on other news sources, I'm sure. But here's the one thing. Here's the only thing you have to remember. When listening to any of this impeachment stuff, you just have to remember the crying that happened the day after Trump was elected.
Even before.
And before. And of course, they were worried, traumatized, fearful. It had nothing to do with influence of other countries in our elections. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with that kind of deceit or whatever you want to call it. But it had everything to do with abortion rights. I'm sorry to say. I just have to. So I really think here's the way my fantasy mind works. Any TV show that you're watching, any news channel that's covering the impeachment, there should be a little screen within a screen. And no matter what they're talking about in the hearing room, that there should just be a round, a looped version of all those people screaming and crying, such as, get your abortions now, because it's all going to be IUDs and birth control requests have skyrocketed as soon as the announcement of Trump. He hasn't come down with a heavy hammer on that stuff. You know? But there's the spirit that if you're pro-life, a lot of these things follow, and they're just and he's I've got to confess, I feel like I want to embrace him, even though he was a crazy philanderer as a young person. I want to embrace him sort of as an ex-drinker. You know, sometimes the best person to deal with someone trying to stop drinking is, mm-hmm, to talk to somebody who was a heavy drinker.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm stopped. You know, and if it were the case that many in the country were addicted to the new man-made right of abortion. Let's just call it as we see it. And here's a man who most likely in his younger days probably didn't think about that too much and probably would have gone along with the cultural trend. But something got in him. I think it's a great deal about a Holy Spirit, you know, he's like an ex-philanderer, like an ex-drinker now.
Or in reform.
Reformed philanderer. And now he's making up for lost time, you know.
I realize he's no saint. I realize that.
He's not a saint, no.
But when you look at the bigger picture, what you're trying to say, you know.
Yeah.
Is that Vader? Is Vader here?
Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's that's one of the impeachment hearing persons tuning in.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. Now before we get to the meat of today with that very interesting book by Layla Miller. And I want to thank a good friend of mine, Mr. Jim Coughlin, for putting that in my hands. And we got to dive into that. But let me make a connection between something else in the news and the president's impeachment, as it were. And that was this little ditty about China. China's coming out. And I have to thank Armand, our wonderful man behind the scenes of Winds of Change. Many of you listeners may not know Armand's name, but he's our hero. What is he, Tony? What is Armand?
He's my personal hero.
Personal hero.
I would like to say that.
I think that's good enough. I think that's good.
He's the man behind the curtain, I think, is the best way to describe
him. He's the man behind the curtain, brains, and motivational speaker.
Right. He takes his directions from the man above, so he's our
Indeed, indeed. There is. Nick, how do you call Armand?
He calls him sir or boss.
Calls him sir. Okay, yeah, that's good enough. Anyways, that's a roundabout way of thanking him for a lot of the good stuff that I get in the emails and whatever. And friend, too. There you go. Thank you, Nick. That's very good. But in the news, of course, China's in the news because there's a lot of protests going on against the hardline communists, as it were. And it's not unrelated that the church, here's a little ditty that came across the Catholic News Network Association. A Chinese Catholic bishop has said that Catholics in China must put their loyalty to the state before their loyalty to the faith. Ouch.
Yeah.
That hurts. Because that's giving up the ghost, or that's giving up the store. Bishop John Feng Xingyamo made the statement during a Communist Party-sponsored meeting in Beijing last week, held to discuss concerning religion in China. He said, love for the homeland must be greater than love for the church, and the law of the country is above canon law, said Bishop Fang. At the Pontifical Consultative Conference on Religion, according to reports from Asia News, Bishop Fang is head of the Diocese of Lingyi in the east coast of China. In addition to serving as the Bishop of Lingyi, Fang is also president of the Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association, the state-sponsored Catholic group which existed in schism with Rome until the conclusion of the controversial Vatican-China agreement struck last year, pushed by and approved by Pope Francis. That agreement gave communist officials a say in the appointment of Catholic bishops and the right to enforce sinicization. On local Catholic practices. From what I can tell, that little word, sinicization, is kind of in a parallel to assimilation in our parlance, except it's when we use assimilation, we're talking about people who move to the United States that are going to assimilate to the American culture, which does have a strong sense of religious freedom. But this points out I think it's the greatest issue we face is that what is the relationship between the church and the state? And we get it over and over again. And it puts in context, here's the question, and then we can move on. When people negatively react to President Trump's phrase of put America first. Mm-hmm. If they're mad at put America first, they're usually saying something like, "You're renewing the spirit of nationalism that fueled World War I and consequently World War II." And there's no real distinction made between the nationalism of the Nazi Socialist Party of Germany and patriotism, which is a legitimate love for your country. But this little news item where the Catholic bishop in China is saying that you have to put your love for the state above love for the church, that creates the state church.
Mm-hmm.
And that destroys Catholicism, because Catholicism doesn't want to be a state church. Catholicism wants to be a universal church helping all states. And so it really, so when Donald Trump says put America first, the unique thing about him, and the reason why I'm when he says those things and when I hear those things, I'm not worried, because he has, I'm going to say it this way, he has miraculously combined a certain sense of put your country first, but don't abandon Christianity.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I think one of your shows I was listening to, you said about peeling the onion. Go deeper and deeper, and you see. You know, I look at this and I say to myself, okay, well, you know, does the average person really know the things we're talking about, or the things that are like at the heart of this? You just hear the, oh, he did this, he did that. And you hear it so many times that people, when they don't think, okay, there's more to this, let me look into this, they don't
step
do that
back and see the deeper level. That's where the onion comes in.
I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, even the little thing you're talking about China now, I'm thinking, my gosh, this man was elected. Let's do the work that he was set out to do. Yet you've spent all these years saying he's done something that nobody can really prove.
Right.
And now you're wasting all this time trying to prove something that was disproved. I just don't.
And the only way I can make sense of it, and I think it makes perfect sense, is to remember my little screen within the screen.
Exactly.
They will push and push, not because they're so interested in Russian or Ukrainian interference, but like the angry women on The View and Oprah shows or what have you, get your abortions now. We've grown so accustomed to this new right and our new lifestyle. We don't want to have to go back to puritanical days when women are barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. That's their thinking, but that's not going to, I want to say, as someone who's very pro-life, friends, don't worry about that. That won't happen. we will recover a better sense of the relationship between man and woman. That certainly is a beautiful thing, and that's what what you're going to hear. After our break, you're going to hear the difficulties within marriage situations and how children of divorced parents evaluate things and how it affects people. We have to work on the proper relation between man and woman as God wants it, as well as the proper relation between state and church as God wills it. There's such a parallel.
Yep.
There is such a parallel. Let me just end with this before we go to the break, okay, Nick? Because this part of the story hurts the most, because it's stating that since about 2013, you know, almost seven years ago, crosses have been constantly removed from an estimated 1,500 churches in China, both in Catholic churches and in the Protestant churches that exist there, as part of an effort to sinicize Christianity. New restrictions were put in place by the Chinese government just last February, 2018, making it illegal for anyone under the age of 18 to enter a church building.
Wow.
They know the future is part of the children are the future, and you don't want the children being affected by that. And here's this one. This is the saddest part, I think, of the story. Last month, Chinese authorities demolished a Catholic church after the government claimed that the building lacked proper permits. The parishioners during the destruction protested outside the church. But Chinese officials shouted back at the protesters, claiming that the Vatican is on our side and the Vatican will support our tearing down this church.
Wow.
That hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts. Why are they saying that?
Wow. Yeah. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's reading my mind.
Yeah. Just because
Pope
Francis
that in its sense is another onion that needs peeling.
It is. Yeah. If you're not aware of this deep universal historical, it runs all throughout history and it runs all through cultures. The key and very delicate and very difficult, very mysterious, very complicated relationship between church and state. If that isn't one of your concerns, then you've lost. you'll give in. It was exactly what happened in England, mm-hmm. what happened in France during the French Revolution. And let me say this, it was poised to happen in the United States when America was founded, had it not been for Catholics who pushed the issue of religious freedom. Each Protestant denomination was trying to establish their own state-sponsored church. Like Virginia would have been mm-hmm. Anglican, and New York would have been Dutch Reform, and Pennsylvania would have been Unitarian, or all these Southern Baptists. And Southern Baptist is a term that didn't come until the Civil War. But there were Baptists. Anyways, okay, so I digress. But let's take a quick break, and we'll shift from that difficult relationship of how does God want church and state to relate. We're going to shift to how does God want man and woman to relate. Something. Okay, God bless you. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. What is a saint anyway? Although I was imprisoned for 7 years during a terrible persecution of the church under the pagan Roman Emperor Diocletian, I'm one of the first saints honored not because I suffered a bloody martyrdom like St. Peter or St. Paul. I was called a saint because people began to say, Nicholas loves Jesus so much that you can see a lot of Jesus in him. And that's what a saint is, someone who wants to become more and more like Jesus, who is the light of the world, each and every day of our lives. One day when a class of parochial school students were in church, their pastor asked the assembly of children, what is a saint? Then a first grade girl pointed up to a stained glass image of a saint saying, saints are those people who let the light in. And so as we celebrate the birth of Christ, let your light shine before others that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Christ is born, glorify him.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to Christmas on the Prairie. Come and hear the story of the real St. Nicholas and take a ride with him in his own horse-drawn carriage.
Saturday evening, December 7th, from 2 to 6 p.m., an indoor and outdoor family event. Experience the beauty of a Byzantine church, and homemade Christmas bake sale items are available. Christmas on the Prairie at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, Saturday, December 7th from 2 to 6 p.m.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. So we're going to switch from the sticky relationship between church and state to the stickier. Well, I don't know if it's stickier. It's certainly sticky,
just as much.
The relationship between man and woman and how God wants us to work this out. Because, my friends, if we ignore this part of our lives, we're missing what God is so interested in. It's why, and I like the term that Pope John Paul II used when he speaks about marriage as a primordial sacrament. We're used to hearing the term Eucharist as the source and summit of our faith, which is so beautiful and so true. But to appreciate marriage as the primordial sacrament, it focuses you on if you are married, that one person who's unique in all your life. And it's so challenging. I sometimes listen to people and I want to help and everything. And I think, God, why did you make it so hard? Why is it so difficult for so many people, you know? Maybe this is somewhat of a book that should be looked at. It's called Primal Loss. And it's not called written by Layla Miller. It's edited by Layla Miller because she says right at the outset that the bulk of the almost 300 pages are all just quotes from transcriptions of interviews she's had. And it should be read by everyone. As a matter of fact, part of her introduction, it says, who should read this book? And basically everyone can and should read it. But I particularly, well, of course, I look here at who should read this book? Priests and therapists or people that are trying to help others. She says, I beg you and the children of divorce beg you, save for extreme cases where there is no other possible choice or legal option, do not counsel for divorce. Even otherwise good and faithful Catholic priests and counselors, including some to whom I have personally referred couples, have planted seeds of divorce and annulment in couples' minds, even when the couples were looking for help to stay together, not an out. So that's, she's pointing out something that I could relate to. You see someone who's in a difficult situation, you want to free them from the pain. So obviously getting away from the other person seems like an option that should be considered. I do say at times maybe that is the only option. But I think I would have to agree with what she's saying is that it should be so rare. Then she says this about those who have been divorced. And she says, this book is not to beat you up, but simply to open your eyes and your heart. The stories here are a chance to hear and understand your children who may have never spoken these thoughts out loud to you. And you will learn why they haven't spoken. Even your successful, seemingly well-adjusted children, even decades later. I pray that you will hear them. You may not even realize the chasm that lies between you, or that the quickest way to bridge that chasm is simply to listen to them and then to say, I'm sorry from the heart, with no excuses and no justifications, just a sincere apology. It will go a long way. It will be a healing ointment for your child's soul. You have no idea. She said somewhere else that just be quiet. Listen to these stories, and especially those who are divorced or those who are thinking of getting divorced. Just listen. It's kind of a hard thing to. She's sort of saying, shut up. You shared your feelings enough. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in great measure, a lot of people who do go through a divorce, they are frequently trying to talk about their situation and try to get others on their side, so to speak. And so they do share a lot of their feelings. And, you know, you can't help it. There must be part of that, but it has to be on a short leash, maybe. Maybe that's the way to say it. And she's just saying, okay, you be quiet. Listen to these stories. Listen to the children who are now grown up, who have lived through, a divorce or so. Tony, I'm sure you know folks, and it touches your heart.
I'm thinking of somebody right now as you speak, Father.
And I don't know. Let's take a few of these, and maybe we can weave in and out of some other things. But she, the book is structured simply by 8 different questions. Layla Miller says that she wondered about this topic. She herself isn't divorced, but knows obviously people, and there's struggles and. She put out a Facebook post or something like, okay, those of you who grew up through divorced parents, send me your thoughts. And she thought, well, who knows? What'll I get, you know? Will I get 5, 10, 15? She got hundreds.
Wow.
She got hundreds of them and had to sift through them all and put them together. The first question, which is the broadest and does set the scene, maybe we'll get to some of the other ones, but I doubt it in this small hour of time. The question is, what effect has your parents' divorce had on you? Open-minded.
That's a good question.
Question, yeah. Just get out with it, you know, and say. So here's one that I do think we could start off with. And she doesn't name the people. She puts numbers next to you. They are real people, but obviously you don't know their real names. So she goes, yeah. This person says, yes, that question is a broad question. If I had to boil it down, I would say that the greatest effect would be on my own marriage and my family dynamics now that I have my own family. I was raised by feminists, my mom and her sisters, and I suppose the culture as well, who instilled in me the idea that you must always be able to look after yourself. I took that to heart and was very outspoken. I shudder now at how obnoxious I was. I was also determined not to have to rely on anyone, read a man, to take care of me. Then I fell in love. As it turns out, all the strong women stuff didn't help me in marriage at all. My heart was guarded always. And what do you know? That's not really how you do marriage. In fact, I didn't know how to do marriage at all. How sad is it that when my husband was away on business, I was actually more at ease. I knew how to do the single parent thing. That was a piece of cake for me. It was what I knew. My entire marriage has been very difficult for me. I like that. I'm going to pause here for a second because I just want to underline that she says the strong woman stuff. My heart was always guarded. My heart was always guarded. That's powerful, you know. You're guarding it. But when you say the I do's and you share a life together, God puts this man together with this woman, and that sharing is quite a challenge. I guess you could share too much, right? Sometimes, I think especially for the man side, we don't get so much comfort from just sharing.
Yeah,
I think that's I'm thinking back to do you remember a book by the title of Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus?
Yes. Yeah. You know,
I still think of that one a lot. John Gray, he was a psychologist or some kind of counselor, and he wrote it after his divorce. And
wow.
Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is quite brain wrinkly. And he would, I think, quickly agree with me that part of a woman sharing her feelings and her thoughts about her anxiety or her worries helps her heal. And men don't always pick up on that, because for us men,
we don't want to hear that.
We don't want to hear it. And John Gray points out an interesting why, because when we hear a problem, we automatically say to ourselves, okay, I got to fix it.
Exactly.
You know, here's the problem. Where's the solution? I got to fix it. And if you don't have an answer, then why bother talking about it? You know, to me as a man, that seems perfectly logical, you know?
Yeah.
But for a man to realize that women are wired differently, one of the pieces of advice that he gave in that book, Men Are From Mars, or Women Are From Venus, is able to say, tell me more, or come back and repeat something she said mm-hmm. about it, and she'll feel... you heard her at least.
See, I wonder if couples even think about this. I mean, a marriage isn't about him and her. It's about we.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to help each other. You're supposed to combine and become one. There's no me and you.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem with a lot of people.
You're either the man and the woman are giving up something, you know. I'll even go so far as to say that this challenge is so challenging that it's part of the reason why same-sex marriage is on the rise. And we have a mayor here in this big city of Chicago that's proudly lesbian. We have one of the front runners in the Democratic primary, the candidates for president, that's proudly homosexual. And it's as if those... people that sense the difficulty in finding the right balance and working on the right kind of man-woman relationship. So it's just not worth it. Go, if you're a man, go with a man, because you're wired the same way and so you can give each other the pleasure you want, blah, blah, blah. There's no reason more. I had to discuss a baptism with a lesbian couple not long ago, and I wanted her to know that she's loved and God, and we'd be happy to have her part of our community, except she should not take communion. Mm. And as far as a baby. I was willing to baptize the baby, but I wanted it to be a private ceremony so that the whole family does it. Then I could say a little bit more than I would in a bigger situation. Well, those two ideas weren't acceptable to her, so I did not want to say, go to a few other churches where I know there's much more gay-friendly pastoral ministers.
This puts everybody in such a difficult situation. I mean, it's either like, you know, I'm forcing you to think this way, or I'm, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just hard.
It truly is. Let's jump back. Nick, we're going to take another quick break here, and we'll come back to some of these testimonies. Keep your hanky next to you and your rosary. Hanky and rosary.
I'm preparing for this. You know.
I'm Father Tom Coy. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Did you know that a princess helped introduce St. Nicholas to the Western world? This happened in the year 972 when Princess Theophano, the niece of Emperor John of Constantinople, brought a mosaic icon of yours truly, St. Nicholas, to Rome as a wedding gift to her husband-to-be, Otto II, the future emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. After their royal wedding mass celebrated by Pope John XIII in the old St. Peter's Basilica, Princess Theophano became the Lady Di of her age. Suddenly, everything she did, including her love of St. Nicholas, seemed to be copied by everyone. In fact, besides me, there's one more thing she introduced to the Western world that you'll use during your meal this Christmas. The dinner fork. So as we raise our dinner forks this Christmas, let's remember the royal princess who worshiped the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords as we proclaim, Christ is born, glorify him.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to Christmas on the Prairie. Come and hear the story of the real St. Nicholas and take a ride with him in his own horse-drawn carriage.
Saturday evening, December 7th, from 2 to 6 p.m., an indoor and outdoor family event. Experience the beauty of a Byzantine church, and homemade Christmas bake sale items are available. Christmas on the Prairie at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Saturday, December 7th, from 2 to 6 p.m.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Oh, I like that little promo for Father Loya's church way out. He's not far from my little church of St. James.
Yeah, I miss Father Loya.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while.
He's doing his stuff. God love him. Okay, we're in the midst of, I'm sharing a couple of the entries into this book by Layla Miller, who put these testimonies together. It's called Primal Loss. And it's a book with stories from the adult children of divorced parents. And here, this one is continuing here. I'll just start up again where she says, another aspect of the major long-term effect of the divorce is that my mother used me as her surrogate husband. I don't think she meant to, but she did. She shared her problems and worries with me, and we cried so many, many nights. That's how we'd fall asleep. I also had to fill the role of accompanying her to funerals or shows, movies, work events, and things like that. My mother also had several hospitalizations that fell on my shoulders. By then I was a teenager because I was the one who was there. And I always felt tremendous pressure to get her a really nice Christmas gift and really nice birthday gifts, because if I didn't, there wouldn't be a special gift for her. After I got married, my husband pointed out how much energy I spent trying to get her just the right present. It was over the top. And here's a line that rings out throughout history, I think. As is said, the parents who quit on their marriage make the decision to put down their own cross and leave it for their kids to pick up. I definitely agree with that, she says. Doesn't that just sort of hit you?
Yeah.
Because it is challenging to live with somebody who doesn't like you or is treating you badly, has so many issues of themselves. It's incredible. I don't think it's in this witness, but I read it somewhere else where someone was saying that the cross that the other is or represents, you are laying it down on your kids, but you sort of have, especially mothers have that instinct to die for their children. I'll die for my children. But then, do you love your children enough to live with the dad of your children? I'm willing to die, but I'm not willing to do whatever it takes, so to speak. You know what it kind of reminds me of? I'll use a parallel, obviously being a priest, and I have not that I was a complete nerd throughout my youth and all the rest. I know some stuff.
I know some stuff.
And sometimes at weddings, I'll share the fact that, I kissed a few girls. You know, and you learn some things. But it reminds me of seminarians, mm-hmm. when we were in the seminary and when we spoke about, I don't know if I want to be a priest because I feel the need to get married.
Right.
And so as a seminary, I perfectly understood what their situation was, obviously. You know, it's a natural, beautiful desire, vocation. But then as I saw a lot of seminarians drop out of the seminary because they wanted to get married, and so they get married, and then they turn into these real liberal Catholics or non-Catholics, mm-hmm. Who are pro-contraception and pro-choice. I'm thinking, okay, well, at that point, you said, okay, I'm gonna leave the seminary because the cross of not being married is too, I'm just not cut out for it. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave the seminary, I'll get married. But then now the cross of not using contraception is too big for you. And the cross of leaving, let us say, a certain political party that is hell-bent on keeping abortion legal, that's too hard for you. And so just that's what this little ditty here makes me think of as a parallel. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. Am I making any sense?
Makes a little sense, yeah.
There's something in there. Okay, so she goes on. The thing that occurs to very few when they are contemplating divorce is that it affects across generations. Nobody imagines the baptism of their first grandchild as being a stressful, uncomfortable occasion where ex-spouses will be reunited, each coming face to face with the person who more than likely represents the worst time in their lives. But that's what it so often is. All the joyful times, weddings, baptisms, birthdays, graduations, are tainted by the divorce. At least in my case, they have been. My kids have seen that Nana and Granddad are kept separate. that Nana won't speak to Granddad. And if one is invited, most likely they won't see the other. They've seen us juggle and split holidays when it would have made so much more sense for everyone just to get together. They've seen uncles and aunts picking sides, even to this day. Breaks my heart. Breaks mine too, huh?
Wow.
For all that.
And so, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. I don't know what to add to that. There are a whole bunch of other stories. Maybe with the time we have left here, Tony, maybe I'll come back. This is a very powerful book, and it's worth
it. We need to spend more time on this, I think.
Yeah. To help, it sort of just stands out as... I want to help folks work through these things.
But how do you do that? I mean, is it worth the talking, or is it...
Yeah.
I'm sure you come to people that don't want to be in the same room
with
the other person.
Yeah. I told one woman who's ready to divorce her husband, she says, I just can't imagine my future with this guy, the guy that we've had children with. And he's just been so rude to me throughout all the years. He's been so... one of the things that tugged on my heartstrings the most is when she said, I never felt like a partner. I never felt on equal basis. I always felt put down. You know, guys, be very careful about putting down your wife, especially with others. You can argue and you could say, I don't agree with this position, or but be very careful about putting her down like that. And so she was saying that I can't think of the future with him. And I said to her, okay, but let us say that I can work with your husband, remake him. Maybe he needs some remaking. And so give me 6 months to a year, and I'm going to try to remake him. And then you won't have to live with that guy anymore that you know of from the past. You can imagine a future with a new man. Just happens to have the same name, the same body.
But could you really remake it? That's the thing.
That's the question. I know the Holy Spirit can't.
Holy Spirit, yeah.
The Holy Spirit can do anything. Can make something. Can he let himself be remade into the man that his wife needs? You know, that's the question. Because you can compromise, you can change yourself in many different ways, but if you feel you're losing... there are some things you shouldn't compromise on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why our faith is so essential. Our faith especially helps us understand what are the non-compromisable things. And though that what I just said a little bit before, guys, be careful not to put your wife down. That's usually not a part of any political campaign, you know,
no.
like abortion is, you know, that's you can make laws about it, and there have been laws and there's court cases and everything. But there can, and there should be a whole series of things in our mind that don't get to that political realm, but that when it is something about, don't put someone down, don't put your wife down. Or your husband. I think women can do it to their husbands, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? One of the things that I kind of... Well, we're running all out of time, and I want to get to this part, because this is from a woman whose Catholic friends encouraged her to get a divorce. But they didn't, and she's glad that her parents never did, she'll say. I'll save you the full background of my marriage, but it was difficult from the start. I was pregnant when we married, and we struggled in silence during the first few years. Then one day my husband finally confessed to me that he had been wildly unfaithful before we got married, and had been keeping it a secret for years. I was devastated. I had recently reverted to Catholicism and took to my private Facebook group of faithful Catholic women to seek advice and comfort. When I shared my story, to my great shock and dismay, I was told by most of them that I needed to leave my marriage. I was told everything from get a safety plan in place to set up a private bank account and start saving. At first, I tried to be polite and simply thank them for their suggestions, but I wasn't interested in leaving my marriage. I was told repeatedly that my marriage wasn't valid anyway and that I didn't have to put up with this emotional abuse on his part. The funny thing, though, is that the more people told me my marriage was bad, the worse I treated my husband and undermined our marriage. I began to believe that my marriage wasn't real or precious. Pretty much everyone I shared my story with had nothing helpful to say, and they told me that divorce would be best, or at least inevitable. I had to start defending my husband, which was hard for me because I felt so wronged by him. But he needed me to defend him, even at the same time that I tore him down. It wasn't until months later that I realized just how much this venting in and of itself was destroying my marriage. I vowed to stop saying negative things about my husband. And I also realized that if I was going to save my marriage, I would be doing it alone. So I did. I started by telling my husband that under no circumstances, aside from immediate danger, would I ever consider divorcing him. Then I went about setting up firm boundaries with my husband. I think this is key. If he crossed them, there would be appropriate consequences, but that consequence would not be divorce. Through this process, I realized how I had enabled his bad behavior and how we had been destroying each other. As I changed, so did he. I cut off relationships with friends who had been unhelpful. I also enlisted the help of people who had been supportive and who could hold us accountable for our actions. I prayed and focused my mind on the good things in life. And everything changed. My husband transformed from a selfish liar to a man who put me and the family first. Are we perfect today? No, but guess what? We're stable. Our fights don't explode anymore. We find ways to enjoy each other's company. We take care of each other. I can tell you that it was not easy or fun. That was a dark, dark time in my life that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But the beauty of the storm is the rainbow afterwards. Had I taken the bad advice and given up without giving it my all, a family would have been destroyed like so many others. If you're in a difficult marriage, divorce isn't the answer. Growth is. And we all need to stop perpetuating the kind of victim mentality that was forced on me. The goal of marriage is to get one spouse to heaven, and now we keep that goal as our guiding light.
Wow.
That's pretty powerful.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, my friends, and thanks, Tony, for being with us. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
To say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to past.